bass guitar. Is that how you learned it, and you never bothered to buy two new ones, or is there a plan?
After 2 years, I mean, what's the point spending money on a lottery? It's like 2 is enough. It's adequate. Anybody can play this bass.
Garage band. Do you think you're still a garage band now?
No, definitely we've progressed to a basement band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we've got inside the house now.
We're inside the house now.
Sitting in a van all day long.
That part's not fun.
That part is not the most fun.
Does it smell in the van?
It smells in the van.
Oh, I like it when it smells. Is it dirty in the van?
It's dirty in the van.
Oh, I like it when it's dirty.
I think that most music probably is in a sense or it's sort of an electronic thing or a mathematical thing, and that all exists in the molecular structure of the universe.
When you started off, you were a garage band. Do you think you're still a garage band now?
No, definitely we've progressed to a basement band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got inside the house now.
We're inside the house now.
Sitting in a van all day long.
That part's not fun?
That part is not the most fun.
Does it smell in the van?
It smells in the van.
Oh, I like it when it smells. Is it dirty in the van?
It's dirty in the van.
Oh, I like it when it's dirty.
I think that most music probably is in a sense or it's sort of an electronic thing or a mathematical thing, and that all exists in the molecular structure of the universe.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Revolution Rock here on CJAM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area. I'm your host Dave, joined with Adam. We're also syndicating across several different campus community stations throughout Canada.
Several lovely campus community stations, of course.
Yes, and this is the second episode of our annual theme month-based programming every February. Each show we do has a theme. And this one is different. We're going to be doing a show in tribute / celebration to the music and influence of Detroit musician Wayne Kramer.
And Wayne Kramer, let's not mince words, he's best known for his work with the MC5, one of the pioneering groups that you can consider proto-punk. Maybe you can consider them kind of a predecessor of hard rock or power pop. Like, they have a very long lineage in terms of where their influence spread. But when you look at a lot of where that influence laid, it was with the guitar sounds and tones of the group, with the two principal guitarists, of course, Wayne Kramer, who unfortunately passed away just the other week at the age of 75, and also the late, great Fred Sonic Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were part of this very unique dual guitar attack the MC5 had. And you know, every member of the MC5 added something unique to the sound. Rob Tyner, the vocalist, had his own style and energy, in addition to Dennis Thompson, who was the drummer. Dennis Machine Gun Thompson, we should say, because...
Very appropriate name for his drumming style.
Yes, it was definitely an appropriate name for his drumming style.
And something else we also need to mention, like, we did briefly touch upon in this introduction, the MC5 being a proto-punk group.
Mm-hmm.
So punk before punk really became a thing.
Yeah.
You know, arguably along with the Velvet Underground and the Stooges, one of the core set of bands that went on to influence that entire genre. And unlike those other aforementioned bands, where you can kind of look at either an ethos or a stylistic influence, it was everything with the MC5. It was the way they played the music. It was their aesthetic, their presentation, and their political ethos yes. as well. They were an extremely politically active band. And we're going to get into some of that history as the show progresses. But we just don't want to focus exclusively on the MC5 because we do want to pay tribute to the late, great Wayne Kramer, his incredible guitar sound that went on to influence a number of different groups, ranging from Sonic Youth to Motorhead.
To The Clash, mm-hmm. to The Sex Pistols, kind of all over the place.
White Stripes. Like,
did you say Soundgarden already?
Not yet.
Okay,
no.
Soundgarden's another one. I'm sure Fugazi. I'm just naming those two because when MC5 did a recent reunion, Kim Thayil of Soundgarden played, mm-hmm. and the drummer also of Fugazi played in the band. So, wide-ranging influence. It changed a lot musically and, of course, lyrically with their messages in their songs and the way they did things. We're going to get into that. But we're going to start off, actually, with the opening track from their debut album, which was recorded live at the legendary Grandy Ballroom in Detroit, where they would play a lot of their shows. They started out as a cover band, and then they switched to their own style mm-hmm. in the mid-60s, and them, along with the Stooges, would open for basically any touring band that came through Detroit, both very connected in the city and the influence that would later come. But... Mm-hmm. This album, Kick Out the Jams, was recorded live over two nights at the end of October, and this track actually features Wayne Kramer on lead vocals.
Yes, and one of the few tracks that features him on lead vocals on this particular album. And you know what? It should be said. When people talk about the MC5, sometimes it feels like they only ever talk about this record. And rightfully so. It is an incredible record. One mm-hmm. of the best live albums. We did talk about Sam Cooke last week and his great live album, and I think it's up in that upper echelon of fantastic live recordings. But, you know, the MC5 were so much more than just one album or one song, because often people just equate them with the title track, Kick Out the Jams. They had a large influence in their music, and even though they had a very small discography, it was very influential. So this opening set, as you said, we're starting with Rambling Rose, the opening track from this album, but we're going to play something from every single MC5 studio album, which isn't going to be hard, because there's only two.
Three, if you count the first one.
Well, that's not a studio album.
It's an album album.
It is an album album. Regardless, we'll get more into the history of it as we come on later on to the show. But yes, stay tuned for this opening set of all music from the MC5. If you have anything you want to say to us or if you have a request, you can phone us from the Motor City at 1-855-344-2526. You can also reach us from out of town using that number. And in Windsor, you can reach us at 519-971-3630.
You must choose. It takes 5 seconds. 5 seconds of decision. 5 seconds to realize your purpose here on the planet. It takes 5 seconds to realize that it's time to move. It's time to get down with it. Brothers, it's time to testify, and I want to know, are you ready to testify? Are you ready? I give you a testimonial. The MC5.
Family roll.
You are tuned in to CJAM 99.1 FM and listening to Revolution Rock. As part of Theme Month here, we are celebrating the life and music of the late, great Wayne Kramer, best known for his role as guitarist in the MC5. However, he also had a very storied career thereafter and a very interesting life, which we'll be touching upon as the program goes on. Of course, as we do know, he is principally recognized for his efforts in the aforementioned band, the Motor City Five, and we're going to talk about that a little bit and call back the songs which we had heard, highlighting that great guitar sound that both he and Fred Sonic Smith were known for, really creating a, I guess you could say, a plethora of influences ranging from garage rock, punk, even like verging in metal and psych to an extent.
Yeah, and then, like, you're talking about their influence, but also the influence that they took was also unique because...
Oh, they took a lot of things to get influenced, that's for sure.
I mean, musically.
Oh, that too, yes.
You know, there's, of course, the soul and R&B. That's definitely there in the music. And, of course, like, early rock and roll, like Chuck Berry and things of that nature. Yeah, that early rock and roll and some of the early 60s, late 50s stuff. But also free jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne Kramer definitely brought that and some of the other members to the band, as we'll hear later on one of the tracks that actually ends out MC5's debut live album anyway. But yeah, I think they even opened for Sun Ra, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, there's a little bit of a story to that, but we'll talk about that when we get
Coltrane
to that song
as well. But anyways, there was definitely a jazz influence as well that kind of creeped into their music and their performances and even just the way that they presented things as well.
And I think that tied into their political ideology, because we're going to touch upon that a little bit. It's very interesting, and they were actually huge social justice advocates. Now, I think a lot of people roll their eyes when they hear about the term the White Panther Party, because, you know, there's that cringe factor of, oh, is that like some sort of weird like white nationalist group? No, this was a satellite of the Black Panthers. So basically, the MC5, along with some other cohorts, wanted to make a group that would basically collaborate and proliferate information about what the Black Panthers were doing to foster community and to actually help people in need, but reaching out to white neighborhoods that oftentimes members of the Black Panther Party, because of racial stigmatization, would not be able to enter into or would be turned away from.
Mm-hmm.
So this actually turned a lot of people on to the politics at the time and really helped, I would argue, turned a lot of people on to racial politics at a time that often that was neglected, especially by people who want to just listen to rock and roll, have a good time, just forget about the world. The MC5 were like, no, we can have fun, but we got to talk about issues too. And when I talked about how they influenced the ethos of punk, it's hard to imagine a group like The Clash or The Jam explaining their type of political ideologies without a group like MC5 preceding them.
And, you know, another big one, although it's different, but Rage Against the Machine is a huge
influence.
And
they're,
there are no strangers to saying that they love the MC5. Even Tom Morello had a message when Kramer passed away, and they were friends. And anyways, influenced a lot of different areas of music, as we were mentioning, yeah, politically as well. Maybe we should tell a story of how they got dropped from their Elektra label. Let's run back the songs.
Yeah, we'll run
first,
back the songs, and before we get into the next set, let's talk about that, because that also, I think, just speaks, like, loads to the ideology of the group. But we actually ended off with, I believe this is the earliest single from the group, a cover of Them's I Can Only Give You Everything. Now, that song itself was a single released in 1967. The band had been playing for a few years prior to that. It was hard to come across for years until it was reissued on The Big Bang, The Best of the MC5, which was a compilation released just at the beginning of the 2000s.
I think it was in the year 2000.
In the year
2000. If anyone
Sorry
gets
for
that
everyone,
reference.
Yeah.
But what was interesting about this collection is there was an anthology, I believe, in 98 that had a bunch of rare stuff on it. But this one kind of put it together with their best songs.
Mm-hmm.
What are many considered to be their best songs. And they had some rare stuff in there that hadn't been heard before and more obscure stuff as well, like this, their very first single, which was very hard to come by. So we're actually going to hear... There was two different B-sides with this single. There was two versions. We're going to hear those a little later on. But this is also one of their influences, obviously, paying tribute. Their first song was a cover, their first single, the A-side anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that, we actually heard a track from each of their three albums, High Time, back in the USA, and of course their first album, which was a live album, Kick Out the Jams.
Now, in terms of the studio output, and there was really only two albums to go by, I would argue High Time is the most accurate encapsulation of what the band sounded like in a studio setting. These very long, psych-indebted garage rock songs that really peak past a 40-minute mark, I think, for the entire album, but with only 8 songs. So there's a lot of sprawling guitar work. You talked about the influence of jazz and free jazz, and I think with those sprawling guitar leads, you definitely hear that influence on this record. And this was actually the first one where we saw some division within the group, because this was the first time the MC5 had separate writing credits for the tracks. So we could actually identify who wrote these songs outside of biographical contexts afterwards. This one is credited directly to Wayne Kramer. Miss X, which is great. It has this kind of glitter rock feel to it. It's one of the rare ballads the MC5 would put out, and such a beautiful song that I think does forecast what will happen later on, actually even the same year, with bands like T-Rex, Bowie, Slade, just to name a few.
Yeah, and this was kind of the beginning of the end for the MC5, unfortunately, at the same time. We'll talk